it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
As always, this episode of the Spurs Show podcast is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Greene King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? Well, for one, you can wash every televised Spurs game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports pubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Greene King. Let's be honest, watching football is way better with friends and family. So get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. That includes huge title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. And don't forget to download the Greene King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Welcome to another Spurs show with me, Theo Delaney, recorded with the bitter taste of Derby defeat still in the mouth. It was a strange game, this particular North London Derby. None of the luck seemed to go our way, and yet we still very nearly rubbed out a 3-0 Arsenal advantage. But not quite. To discuss that and this Thursday's visit to Chelsea, I've got an esteemed panel with me made up of seasoned Spurs show sages. Welcome back, first of all, Dan Lowe. How are you, Dan?
I'm all right. Yeah, I suppose. Good. Been better, good. Been worse. Just yeah. Want it to be over. I mean, the season, yeah. Not the podcast.
Also back, Mark Trainers. How are you, Mark?
Yeah, I'm good. All things considered.
Good. And Stuart Maester joins us again. How are you, Stuart?
I'm fine, thank you. I like being described as a seasoned sage, so that's lifted my spirits.
Well, I like to think we're all seasoned sages. And as Dan says, we kind of wouldn't mind this season just stopping, really. We've got some bloody, that's what now look like really foreboding fixtures ahead of us. But we'll get on to that. We're going to do a separate show about the Liverpool game, Liverpool away. I mean, you never really go into that with any great optimism, whatever the bloody circumstances. But before that, let's talk about what happened yesterday, and then we'll talk about what may or may not happen on Thursday. Weird Thursday, I've got a feeling it's going to be just as weird as yesterday. I felt we were really unlucky. I don't normally read about football or watch it again or anything. I normally take time off from football after a defeat like that, a defeat to the Goons or anything that is really, really. But because I'm so professional, I actually watched this back about half an hour ago on the iPlayer on Match of the Day, and I just thought again. I thought maybe when I came away, I was being very. But I thought we were incredibly unlucky yesterday. All in all. But on the other hand, I felt like we were mugged by a more street smart team. And that's the kind of victory that teams get along the way when they win titles. I hate to say it, but I mean, we just got to absolutely hope to God that we lose to Man City. But we'll come on to that as well. Mark, what did you make of it?
We played looking at recent games, I thought we played quite well in parts, certainly going forwards and certainly in possession. I think some of it hinged on we can't defend corners. I mean, that's just patently obvious now. I mean, literally every week, Newcastle got one, West Ham got one, Everton got two. Well, one was a free kick. It's just ridiculous. But I do think the game hinged on that incident in the first half where we should have had a penalty.
Mm.
And I've watched Match of the Day like you. I've watched Sky this morning. Yeah. And every single ex-player pundit has said they were absolutely gobsmacked they didn't give a penalty for the clip on Kulusevski. It completely changes the way he had to run, and maybe because he didn't go down straight away, or maybe because Michael Oliver's just an idiot. I mean, this is a guy that 3 feet away, Declan Rice boots Ben Davis between the legs. And he's looking at it like that. That's not a penalty.
Yeah. But what we're seeing, I don't want to get into the VAR debate, but what we're seeing again is that these decisions, you know, referees in the heat of the moment, you know, sometimes they just get them wrong because of their rabbits in the headlights, or they just have a brain freeze or whatever. And so what you hope is that VAR will legislate for that sort of thing. VAR's just as, it doesn't make any improvement whatsoever, because VAR should have made him look again at that Kulusevski penalty, the same way as they made him look again at the other one. But arbitrarily, they decide not to. I sit up in the West Stand towards the South Stand end. Even from where I was sitting, it was an obvious penalty, because you cannot fake that kind of fall that he did. It could never have been a dive what Kulusevski was doing there. It was very clearly caught.
I've seen the Sky highlights back, and Gary Neville instantly said penalty. Yeah. He went, what? He hasn't given it?
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure what he was looking at, because he's literally 4 feet away, looking straight. And you can see the still image. He's looking straight at it. It just infuriates me.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole thing did hinge, the whole game did seem to hinge on that, because, of course, they went up the other end and scored, when in fact we should have scored. I mean, we were incredibly unlucky. That was really bad luck. We were very, very unlucky with the offside. Again, that game would have been, without VAR, that goal would have been given, and they wouldn't have even complained. Nobody would have, and they would never have been discussed. VAR fucked the whole thing up. I'm sorry. I've really, really had enough of it. And you could say, oh, yeah, but VAR got you that second penalty. But it doesn't matter, because we'd have been ahead by then, you know. So it's bollocks.
But the final point I'll make on that is, and on the performance yesterday, loads of people saying Arsenal will destroy us on the counter and all the rest of it. They created two chances from open play. Saka scored one, Vicario saved the other from Saka.
Yeah.
They did not create a single other chance in the entire game. And this is a team that's scoring for fun and creating for fun.
Yeah, they didn't play very well.
Wide open.
They didn't play very well.
And I think because we were very good in possession for once.
Nevertheless,
I'd like to have seen Richarlison start. I think you saw when he came on, he occupied the centre-backs.
Mm.
He put pressure on them. He pressurised Raya into that ridiculous mistake by closing him down. I don't know what he was thinking. He thought it was Messi for a minute. I sat there at halftime thinking, I actually don't know how we're 3-0 down in this game.
No. And the more, I mean, when you look at it and review it again today, you're even more mystified. Dan, what did you make? You've seen a hell of a lot of North London derbies. How gutting was this one for you on the, you know, in the scheme of things?
Well, I can tell you the South Stand was not going, I don't know how we're 3-0 down at half time. Everybody we spoke to in the Beaver Town at half time wanted him out.
Yeah, yeah.
By the end of the game, we were a little bit more philosophical.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, I mean, based on your opening discussion, Arsenal were not very good, didn't deserve to win, and VAR robbed us. I didn't think that was the way this podcast was going to go at all. I think we're not very good. That's better than we've played recently, and there's aspects of that performance to like, but I think that if we continue with that, and if he doesn't fix the most patently obvious buggered up part of that team, and that's not even discussing the corners, which is. Our corner routine, defending corners, is one of the most farcical things I've ever seen. You know,
it's really poor.
For 38 years I've been going to Tottenham, And I've never seen anything quite like this. The old Brendan Rodgers routine in Liverpool that didn't work. We're now doing that. Zonal marking at corners. We're conceding almost every corner that comes in, although actually in the second half we did manage to keep a couple of out. But there's aspects of that team and there's aspects of the way we're set up that is farcical.
Okay, so you said, I mean, we're all agreed on the corners and there's no excuse for it because every other team seems to have a very good set piece coach to make, you know, to
well,
shore up.
It's Ryan Mason doing ours now. He's doing
is he doing the defensive?
That's what a rival podcast recently said, right. And apparently he's doing the defensive set pieces.
Well,
P45, mate, get out of our club.
Yeah,
that is unforgivable. When they were doing that, because they've been bringing 11 back and trying to all 10 players back into the box, and they've been trying to do this setup for quite a while, where the whole point of it is to basically get a fist on the ball and then attempt to try and break and try and score counter-attacking from the corner. Mm. But now they're doing this weird thing where they're basically not man-marking anyone and not picking anyone up. And again, the idea effectively is to try to break and try and score from it. But it's giving away goals. When they started doing this particular setup against Newcastle away, you know, above the goal where we were standing, we were watching it and just going, what are they doing? This is not going to work out well. Mm. And then Newcastle kept scoring from it. And it's happening again. And Postecoglou's stubbornness and his kind of post-press conference complaints about how it's not really about the set pieces, it's made me walk in on myself and realise that because he's got a jovial sort of Aussie accent and we like him, we've overlooked the shit he chats. Nonsense, some of it is. Absolute nonsense.
All right. What about you, Stuart? What did it leave you thinking?
Well, just to pick up on what Dan was just saying, the thing, I mean, I believe that Postecoglou has been a really good choice for Tottenham. We are doing, okay compared to what we thought we might be. All of that, all the conversations that have been happening all season, ditto, I agree. But just to pick up on what Dan said, I totally agree with him. After the match, Postecoglou said, and he kept saying, it's all about the details. We've got to get the details right, mate. Now, did any of you know before this match that we had a problem at corners? Did any of you realise that Vicario would... everyone knew it. I mean, it was the talk of the town, right? Everyone knew Vicario was seen to be weak at corners.
Yeah. So
in the first half, Ben White made it his job to really bugger up Vicario. He stood with him, he fiddled with his gloves, he did everything to screw up Vicario. He did it twice and they scored two corners, right? That is a detail. That is a detail that everyone knew. We all knew, and it seems an obvious thing to do, to put someone on to defend the goalkeeper against someone trying to bugger him up, which everyone has tried to do. They didn't do it after the first goal. They didn't learn the lesson for the second corner. In the second half, Sarr came on and he made it his job. You watch Sarr in the second half, he just completely blocks Ben White from going anywhere near Vicario.
Yeah.
He typically manhandles him.
The weird thing about that is he's done that in previous games. It's almost as if Sarr's not on the pitch, they don't do it. It's only if Sarr's on the pitch. But surely you should give that job to someone else if Sarr isn't starting the game, shouldn't you?
That's exactly my point. It's a detail. Yeah. So the reason it's so significant for me is that's naive detail that we chose to ignore. The whole world knew there was an issue with Vicario at corners and the defence at corners, and it was only in the second half. And guess what? Arsenal did not threaten from corners in the second half at all. For me, this was Newcastle all over again. You know, you look at the possession stats for Newcastle. We
had 70-something,
And didn't, you know, Newcastle scored four goals. So I think great possession, promise. But that one detail for me, and then Postecoglou talking about details, for me just didn't make sense. It made me doubt slightly. It damaged.
It's a worry, isn't it? Yeah, it's a worry that he's allowing that to happen. It does seem less than thorough.
It seems odd. The other thing is that strikes me is that the difference between the first half of the season and the second half of the season is the side to side and backwards when you've got a chance to break compared to the rapid break. And I think everyone was getting frustrated that when we got the ball, this rapid break just didn't happen because they just started going side to side and backwards. And it was like they were waiting for Arsenal. Remember, we used to be like this, wait for the other team to get back in position. So, are you all ready now, guys? All ready? Now we'll attack. And that seemed to be what was that. I was frustrated by that.
Yeah. Dan, you said there was a glaring issue apart from the corners. What were you referring to?
Well, I think the main thing, more than anything else, is that that midfield, the starting midfield, does not work game after game after game. It's been taken, like all three players in the midfield have been taken off at pretty much the same point in the last sort of four games or so.
But they've been different combinations, haven't they, every time?
But then, weirdly, the second set of midfielders that then come on play well. I think everyone who came on a sub yesterday actually ended up playing well. It's the first time Bissouma has played well, in any form for quite a while. I thought he was good. I mean, the game had changed a little bit by that point, so it was a bit more of a Bissouma game. But Bissouma needed to be dropped, has been really poor. But you have to think that it's probably something to do with the system more than anything else. The first three midfielders to start the game generally don't play well. I mean, Maddison hasn't played well in quite a while. Bentancur's occasionally played all right, but nothing to his standards of last season. And Bissouma's been off a cliff. And Højbjerg, I wasn't against him starting the game, but was hapless, scored an own goal and looked out of his depth. But he has to get that midfield working. If he does, and you would have thought, the weird thing is about on top of all this, like I think we're probably two really good players away from making the Postecoglou system work. I think there's flaws to it. But I think with a good sort of sweeping defensive midfielder who can cover a lot of ground and help with the counter-attacks, which Bissouma kind of can't really do, and he's good with ball retention, and that team gets a lot better. And I think James Maddison from 6 months ago, and we've got an attacking midfielder who does what Maddison does, unlocks the door schemes. Maddison, I don't think, is really going to survive in that team now. But I think, a Maddison-like player and a sort of sweeping defensive midfield player, that team will probably work.
I saw a story today that said that Lo Celso, who I think a lot of people assumed would probably be on his way because his contract is running down and he's never, ever settled in and made himself a regular starter, that they're talking about extending his contract, which is odd because when you think about it, Lo Celso is the sort of understudy to Maddison. But, what you're saying, Dan, is that Maddison doesn't look up to at the moment and there's nothing to make you think that Lo Celso is the answer either.
Well, he can't play on Thursday, I think. Maddison playing on Thursday, I don't think he will play him on Thursday, but I think Maddison can't play based on kind of current form. Lo Celso, weirdly, has been sort of like one of our form players this season. He just has hardly played. He had that burst of form when he came into the team. He outperformed. He played the best that he played for 3 or 4 years in a Tottenham shirt. He hasn't been a great signing, but he's shown glimmers of promise. But they may as well play him now in an attempt to try and kickstart that midfield. The midfield kickstarts, we can potentially end this season strong and still probably finish about fifth. Yeah. But it's about next season now. It's just about like feeling like there's some hope going into next season. We're probably going to finish fifth no matter what happens. We should try and finish fourth. But that midfield has got to work because, that's as big a threat to us as our inability to defend corners.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Arsenal did. Arsenal, there's a lot of talk about how at this stage of Postecoglou's tenure, we are ahead, actually, on points per game than of Arteta and of Klopp when they were at the same point with Liverpool and Arsenal. So that's something to take encouragement from. We all know that Liverpool and Arsenal made big, important signings to make themselves contenders. In Liverpool's case, they bought a goalkeeper and a centre-half, famously, and spent the money, big money. And they raised that money by selling Coutinho, if you remember. So we've raised the equivalent amount of money by selling Kane, but we haven't gone in and bought the big players that we need. Arsenal bought Rice at the end of last season, which was an obvious, he was the best available, big, imposing, all-round midfield presence, probably in the world. And they spent the money, 100 million quid, bosh, and it's made a huge difference. And you just think, that Spurs need to probably buy someone like that. So we need a linchpin in that midfield. Because the midfield, at the beginning of the season, I was looking at that midfield sort of squad, and you're thinking, we're spoiled for choice here. They're all really good. Yeah. It's just a question of who...
Bentancur, Maddison and Bissouma, earlier in the season, you just thought, once Bentancur comes back, this midfield will be the best midfield in...
Yeah. And they've all dropped every single one of them, even Saar. But Saar you can forgive because he's very, very young and he's still in the early stages of his grown-up career. And I still think Saar will be a huge asset. He's already a big asset and he will be...
But everyone's out of form. Like Vicario was the best goalkeeper. But Vicario was the best goalkeeper in England up until kind of about 2 months ago, and now he's easily rattled and is targeted by everyone we play against.
He did make a stunning save, didn't he? Yesterday, he did. I would say that. Yeah,
I was going to say just on those midfielders, none of them have had the consistency that they would like over the season. Bissouma had his suspension, and then AFCON. Saar has had AFCON and injury. Bentancur and Maddison have both had injury interruptions. You look at that Arsenal team, the one thing I will say,
no injuries.
Eight out of the starting 11 have played 32 games or more.
Yeah. No, they've been incredibly lucky with injuries. They really have.
Only place in the defence have had an issue all season is left back.
Yeah.
The two centre backs, the right back and the goalkeeper have been
just keep playing
constant.
And playing. Yeah.
Rice has been a constant. Saka has been a constant.
Yeah.
And they've chopped and changed a little bit with Havertz and Martinelli and what have you. But pretty much it's the same team that's played all season.
That's a very good point.
They've made fewer changes than any other team in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Which does help.
It's a huge advantage. It's massive, you can't be overstated. I always think injuries are very underrated in terms of the influence they have because they're players. You know, you lose.
But they've played an extra 15 or so games as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we look exhausted. We had 2 weeks off. And it seems that, weirdly, this is a little bit like under Pochettino. We'd always look a lot worse if we had a week off.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's, you know, where they talk about players coming back, they're physically fit, but they're not match sharp. I think you lose match sharpness over a fortnight, don't you? They haven't played a proper competitive game for, they're not up to speed.
Bizarrely, I read a Celtic supporters post who said that the end of the first season of Postecoglou, the team is always looking knackered. They run out of steam. Now, we shouldn't, because we're playing so few games relative to these top teams, that shouldn't be an excuse. But he's saying that this switch, the change, the way they play,
they're not used to it. Yeah.
And on top of that, the other person we're not discussing who looks absolutely knackered, but he's been traveling the world as well as playing all these games, of course, is Son. He looks like he's running out of battery life, isn't he, at the moment? And but on top of that, you know, since the Asia tournament, where, of course, he's flying all over the world. So he goes, he's flying the other side of the world. So we forget all this stuff. But
No, I think that's all. It's all stuff that has a massive influence. The injuries we've had have been huge. I mean, Maddison, he had a really big injury. But Bentancur obviously came back from a very, very long injury and then got whacked again and had another injury and et cetera. The list goes on. They've been hugely fortunate. And Son hasn't had a rest of any sort for a long time, but hopefully he'll get one this summer a little bit because, of course, the Asian Cup has been and gone, so that's not happening and there's no World Cup.
I don't really think fitness is the issue here, though. Like, you know, we finish games strong just like we did under Conte. I mean, we sort of often talk about this where we sit. That there's lots of aspects of this football that isn't that different from Conte, really. And I think we've all kind of tended to go, oh, the Conte football was crap and it was boring and so on and so forth. But it was certainly in that first season really pretty exciting. But we finish games really strongly. You know, we don't necessarily look jaded. Sonny does. I mean, Sonny looked absolutely beyond knackered yesterday. And Bentancur's injury, the type of injury he had, is the type that would definitely impact upon his game. So I definitely buy that. But I don't think we look physically tired. We just look a bit disorganised and we look a bit easy to play against. We concede the same two goals every single week, one from a corner, one from giving the ball away on the edge of the box and breaking quickly. You know, we've seen those two goals over and over and over again. I'm not 100% sure it's fitness. I think there's a little bit more to it than that. But that said, you know, this system can work. It could work. This season has just ended up having a few more teething problems later on than I thought it would have.
I think the big thing for me in the summer is a proper number six, there are only two world-class number sixes in the Premier League, and that's Rice and Rodri. And it is no coincidence those two teams are first and second.
Yeah. Have you got anyone in mind?
There's a few out there. Paulinho at Fulham, I think, is
I think he's in the same class.
With the right players around him, I think he could do a job. You've got Guimaraes at Newcastle. Is he really a six? Sort of.
Much more creative.
Newcastle, Newcastle might have to sell one of their assets in the summer.
Yeah.
We don't know yet. There's a few, but they it's a very specialized position now because you protect that back four. You almost in effect, Rodri. You look at him sometimes, and even Rice yesterday was almost like a third centre back at times.
Yeah, because they're so big and imposing. Apart from being good technical footballers who make good decisions, they're big. They're like a rock. You've got to get round them somehow to get anywhere near the goal, haven't you? But you know what? I've been a Tottenham fan like all of you. We probably got God knows how many years, hundreds of years between us watching Tottenham. I just feel like we've been wanting a good number six ever since Dave Mackay. Do you know what I mean? And every now and then we get one and he never lasts. Like Scott Parker was a brilliant number six, but he was crocked within a year. Sandro was a brilliant number six, crocked within a year, never to be as good again. Wanyama, player of the season, first year. Fucked after that. There's a whole list of it. We've never had one that has actually, I mean, Dembele, everyone loves the idea of him, but he wasn't consistently good for about a year. He was good for about a year. Then he faded and got injured and left. I mean,
Every team is looking. I mean, every team is looking for the same key players. Let's face it, every team is. And that's why Arsenal paid
the spine.
Arsenal paid the right amount for Declan Rice. Obviously, they got him cheap. You could argue, and were giving away.
In the same way that Liverpool paid the money for Van Dijk. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, given that the guy Chelsea bought from Brighton for 100 million, Caicedo. I mean, Declan Rice.
I posted something about a month ago and was ridiculed for it at the time, but there's quite a few more fans on X that are now sort of murmuring about it. I'd play Romero in the six.
I would too. Great shout, 100%.
Well, he's got everything you need. He's big and he's certainly big and strong and he's intimidating. He looked like he decided to play number six yesterday of his own accord, and eight and nine.
Yeah, he did. I tell you, he was a good number six. Eric Dyer in his day.
He was good. When he was good, he was good. He had the same attributes we're talking about, physically imposing. You know,
the point is, he was a centre-half who became number six, went back to being a centre-half.
That's how he got in the England team. When he first got in the England team, it was as a number six, yeah.
And I think I think the point about Romero is a good one for that very reason, because number six in many ways is a supplementary second half, a centre half sometimes, has a pretty strong, but Hackney's and Romero is one of the players that always plays forward.
Yeah.
He's one of the players that always looks forward.
Yeah. I'd also make him captain.
Yeah, but it'd be a bit disruptive to strip Son of the captaincy, wouldn't it?
I know. That's the only thing. And that's my only thing.
He looks like the captain, doesn't he, Romero?
And the leader. He leads by example. And he's vocal.
And he seems to have sorted his temperament out to some extent. He's still got it in him, but he hasn't been...
Apart from when we score a goal, he does like to kick, punch.
Yeah, his own players.
His own players.
is a bit odd.
I think you're absolutely right about playing him in the sort of kind of slightly more sweepery sort of Beckenbauer-y role. I think I think he sort of plays that already, and it would mean that you just put Dragosin or somebody else in a centre back. I think he's our best option for that. And they are out there, these kind of like highly energetic ball winning midfielders. I mean, I think every time I watch West Ham, which is not very often, I always think Alvarez, the guy they replaced Rice with, he'd fit in that Tottenham team quite well. He's good. Mm. And they found him relatively easily, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think they are out there. But I think you're right, Mark. I think it's maybe the simplest solution is right under our nose.
How much? Let's talk about this Chelsea game. How much how worried are you when you look at that fixture, Stuart? I mean, obviously, there's only one thing nearly as bad as losing to Arsenal, and that's losing to Chelsea, especially a Chelsea that are actually pretty, pretty rubbish. I mean, they got absolutely... I mean, Arsenal wiped the floor with them, didn't they? And they're inconsistent about the kindest thing you can say about them. Do you think we can go there and get a result in the current circumstances?
Well, these are two teams that are utterly unpredictable.
Yeah.
We're talking about the team that always fucks us up, frankly, that always screw, you know. But going back to the November match, you know, this year, it all went wrong. You know, everyone always says it went wrong when we played Chelsea. It's an utterly unpredictable, we could have an aurora of talent kind of appearing before us playing brilliantly, or it could be an utter disaster. I you know, when you ask for scores, it would just be plucking figures from the air, because it could be, that match could be anything at all.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, just give everyone a little chance to take a breath. We'll take a little break and then we'll come back and work our way towards the absurd idea of predictions for that, as you say, very unpredictable game. But let's take a quick break.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For premium content, including a daily news show, ex-player interviews, and original documentary series on Spurs, go to patreon.com/Spurs Show and support our show in the process. Also, we've got loads of great Spurs Show merchandise. You click the link in the description to this podcast and you'll find it. T-shirts, mugs, phone cases, the lot. Our London live shows have been great this year, and our last live show of the season is on May 23rd. And that's our annual kind of summer party that we always have. We always hope to get a really good guest. And I think we've got an exceptional guest this year in Danny Rose, who, of course, is a very recent member of the Tottenham squad. He was one of the best left-backs I've ever seen play for Spurs, maybe the best. And he was an absolutely integral part of the really good Pochettino team. And we know he's outspoken because he certainly said some outspoken things in the past. So I'm really looking forward to meeting him. He's our guest on May 23rd at the 100 Club. You can get tickets again from a link in this podcast description, or you go to the 100club.co.uk website. That's our venue, the classic 100 Club in Oxford Street in the West End. Do follow us on Facebook, X and Instagram, and please leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps. Next week, we've got Charlie Whelan, Sean Cook and Chris Parros as guests. So we were talking about the Chelsea game. Dan, what would you do if you were Postecoglou for that Chelsea game?
Drop Maddison, mm-hmm. for sure. I'd put
for Lo Celso. Okay, put Sol.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I'd probably think about playing Kulusevski through the middle to run at their defense, because he's on the whole played all right when he's been there, and I don't think he's been particularly great on the right wing. Brennan Johnson is considerably better on that right wing. I'll put Richarlison up front. I'll put Son back out on the left. I'd sort of basically play a similar-ish team to what we had on the pitch towards the end. I mean, of course, it won't work because our starting midfield always plays crap no matter who they are. But yeah, I think Maddison on the bench. He's too
ineffective. So you'd pay Kulusevski as a 10, and then you'd have Saar and who, what, Bissouma?
No, I'd probably try and put in... I'd probably put Lo Celso in as the six.
Really?
He's got a kick in him. He likes kicking people.
Yeah, that is an adventurous lineup, isn't it?
No, actually I wouldn't. I'd put Romero in as the six.
Oh,
and then I'd put
Saba beside him.
I'd put Alfie Whiteman, the goalkeeper, in the central defence, because you know, is it the worst idea?
Can it
is
be
it
any worse
than what we got?
Yeah, he's trendy, isn't he? He's a DJ trendy and everything. Yeah. So that's got to count in his favour.
And then I'll put all four of us on the bench.
Okay, bloody hell. I don't know if you've been drinking during the little break we had there, Dan, but it's hallucinogenic. What about you, Mark? What would you do?
I would go with the front four of Kulu in the 10, Johnson, Richarlison, Son. I'd love to see Romero in the six alongside Sarr.
He's not going to do that, though, is he?
He's not going to do it, so it'll be...
Not now, anyway. He might come round to it eventually, maybe in the summer.
Yeah, and I'd keep the back four as it is and the goalkeeper as it is and pray Chelsea don't get a corner.
But who are you playing? But who are you playing behind Kulusevski? Which two of that smorgasbord of out of form midfielders?
I suppose it'll be in the absence of Jamie Donnelly not being available and Alfie Devine not being available, because the wonderful Premier League have arranged an under 21 cup semi final for Thursday night,
right?
Exactly the same time as the Chelsea game, so I know where I'll be. I'll be at Stevenage,
right?
Watching our wonderful under 21 side.
Yeah, that's cause for optimism, at least that team, isn't it?
I went to Fulham on Friday. I sat with Luca Gunter's parents, Luca Gunter, the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Firstly, I've sat with quite a few of the parents over the course of the season. I've been to about 18, 19 under 21 games. Firstly, they are all lovely people. The players themselves are really well prepared to talk to fans and polite and all the rest of it. They'll post for photos. But what a team to watch. That you thought the first team took risks. This lot are even more risky at the back of time. Okay. I mean, it's frightening at times. Yeah. But they've lost one league game all season. And tonight is their last league game against Palace. And I've just seen the team pop up. And because they played Friday and they've got the semi-final on Thursday, there's a few 16, 17-year-olds in that side. It's quite a young side. Yeah. Donnelly's not even in the squad. And there's a few others missing.
Why, because they've rested him or because he's injured?
Yeah, no, because they're resting him for Thursday.
Okay,
you can't ask him to play Friday, Monday, Thursday. I mean, it's ridiculous scheduling. No. And then the playoffs start next week for the Premier League. Well, the Premier League 2 has changed format. It's a 26-team league, top 16 now playoff to see who the winners are. So first place 16, second place 15, third place 14.
Jesus Christ.
And then
if you don't make the top 16, that's the end of your season. Yeah. But if you're in the top 16, you've got to play a long, what sounds like a pretty long competition.
It's a round of 16, a round of 8.
Yeah, so that's if you get to win it, you've got to play five more games.
It's four more games. But we've finished first. We can't finish any lower than first.
No, that's why I'm cross. Because I'm thinking we bloody won the thing.
There is a lot of frustration because we've been head and shoulders better than anyone.
Yeah.
You've got Lanchier, the top goal scorer. Donnelly's had 29 goal involvements this season, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he is a player that if he doesn't get a top championship or low Premier League loan next season and Ange doesn't use him, they're just going to waste a talent.
He's a number 10, isn't he?
He's a 10. He's a proper 10.
Yeah,
a proper 10. He sees things other players just don't.
Yeah, and he's quite muscular, isn't he, for his age?
Yeah, and the other.
I mean, I'm just wondering. You know, we were talking earlier. Madison's gone right off the boil. Now we must
Thursday.
Hope. Yeah, well, I don't know about 30. He can't play him on Thursday. He's got to play in the bloody under 21s.
Got semi-final to play.
But I'm just thinking. You know, this number 10 thing suddenly becomes a really interesting conundrum because Madison's lost it. Really, I think he can get it back because he's innately classy. But there's no guarantees. Players sometimes lose it and never get it back. Lo Celso, they think it would appear they're keeping
him
on.
He's not a 10.
Okay,
he's a 6 or an 8 for me.
Okay, Kulusevski again. The jury's out. What is he? Is he a 10 or an 11? Nobody really has concluded yet. But what it seems to me, if they're keeping Lo Celso, whether he's a 10 or not, then Kulusevski and Maddison, they're not going to buy a 10, are they? I'd like them to get Eze.
Well, they already have him. I mean, I think the thought is next season they'll start working this Lucas Bergvall guy in. You know, he's very highly rated within the club. He might not be able to take to the Premier League given how sort of like dribbly and skillful and sort of like he's like a skinny blonde Gazza. I think he's, you know, he might not work in the Premier League because he's so skillful and so singular. But I think they are thinking that he is potentially going to be part of the squad next season.
Is he the new Adel Taarabt?
I mean, I hope he is. I love Taarabt.
But the other issue is not only have you got Donnelly, you've got Mikey Moore who has been training with the first team for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
He's also a 10, but a more left-sided 10.
And he scores loads of goals, doesn't he?
He's way too advanced for under 18 level, which is why he hasn't been selected for the last 3 weeks.
He's not a big guy, is he? He's huge. He could be the centre forward we're looking for.
The whole family are Mill, and they're apparently nutcases. And he is built like an right. absolute...
Well, that's what you want. That is the last detail, because I'm not going to lie to you, Mark. When you started saying what lovely boys they all were earlier, I'm thinking, I'm not sure I like the sound of this. But Mikey Moore's from a family of psychopathic Millwall fans, and he's built like a brick shithouse. Get him in the team. That's precisely... And he scores for fun.
There's a serious point here, I think, which is actually, wouldn't it be lovely... I mean, everyone says we need to go out and make these big statement signings. We need this, we need that. Actually, wouldn't it be lovely to say, actually, this is genuinely a project. We've got this fantastic young team. Mm. We're really going to give these guys a run. You know, Dane Scarlett. Where's Dane Scarlett these days? He's been around forever, it seems
Troy
to me.
Parrott.
Parrott and Niall John are the three... what I would say, leftovers from the previous regime.
The previous great generation.
The current crop really come under Simon Davis's watch in the last two years.
Yeah.
And the advances they've made this season at under 21 level are ridiculous.
And Alfie Devine has been spoken about for a long time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you guys feel, but I would love, I think that they'd get enormous support.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, we just don't know if they're good enough. So many players come through with an amazing reputation at a certain age. I mean, Troy Parrott everybody was talking about Troy Parrott. Everyone was talking about Edwards before that, weren't they? And usually they don't come through. And that's just the way it is at every club, isn't it? No, there's never been a class of 92 at any other big club that you can think of.
I saw an article about the Liverpool youngsters from this season. Sorry, Stuart. Is that everyone says, oh, Liverpool playing the youngsters. Do you know how many academy graduates Liverpool have had as regular first team players since the year 2000?
Who are they?
Gerrard and Alexander Arnold. They're the only two regulars. Curtis Jones, you could argue a little bit, but it's two in 24 years.
And that's about right. I mean, so what have we had? Kane, I mean, I can't think of another one off the top of my head anyway.
Yeah. You know, Oliver Skip is not going to look in. Oliver Skip is not going to look in now. Oliver Skip is not going to look in.
He's injured, but he's well down the list, isn't he? Yeah.
He's well down the list. A young kid went on loan at Doncaster in January, Matty Craig.
He turned him around.
I was so impressed.
They were going down, now they're going up.
First half of the season, he does everything Skip does, but better. And off both feet, he can go left foot, right foot.
Yeah,
and he's been
a revelation.
I spoke to a Doncaster fan over the weekend.
Yeah.
He's literally transformed their season.
Yeah,
they've
absolutely.
Won 14 out of 16 games since he went there.
Up. Yeah,
and they won just off a run of 10 in a row. And he's been brilliant.
Yeah, and it is League Two, but the good thing about that is that League Two, all right, the standard technically is much lower. But physically, that's tough for him to go in and start making that much of a difference as a kid, where they've gone, they were right down near the relegation zone, and now they're right up, you know, they're going up, it looks like. Anyway, we could go on all that. Listen, we're going to do another show. We're going to do another show for the Liverpool game. So all I've got to ask you to make silly predictions now, not as silly as some of the lineup predictions we've made, but score predictions for this Chelsea game. We're going to start with you, Dan.
16-all. I think 2-2, like 2-2,
okay.
Or possibly we win 3-1. I'm more confident about this than I've been last few away games.
All right, Mark.
2-3.
That's in our favour, obviously. And Stuart,
crazy, either 3-3 or a 4-3 could go either way.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's what I think. I'm going to say. Just I've got to think of another score that you haven't said. So I'm going to say 4-2 to Tottenham in an insane and very entertaining game for the neutrals. We'll be back later in the week with a Liverpool preview. But for now, Stuart, Mark, Dan, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this. I can't wait for the Liverpool one now. Theo Delaney in North London saying, go you Spurs!
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.com. sportsocial.co.uk. Sports Social Podcast Network.